Drew.
Hang on.
Drew.
Hang on.
Drew.
What? Stop. What?
Hey. Close. Lock the door. Close the door. Lock it. Lock it.
Stop pushing me.
Close it. Lock the door.
Okay,
lock the door.
All right.
No. Don't look out there. Don't look out there.
What are you? What's your problem?
I don't know. Wait. No, I remember it now.
It's a bunch of zombies.
I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Ourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
Now we can do the show.
This is me.
I know. You look at you doing the show.
This is my voodoo.
You're magicking.
My voodoo trick. I'm doing the show. Here it is.
Good. Voodoo's appropriate.
Voodoo.
It's appropriate.
It is appropriate. Why?
Isn't that the origins of zombies?
Technically.
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 Yes.
Actually,
technically,
it is not voodoo.
What is it?
Because voodoo itself, if I remember this correctly, the actual practice of what is the root origin of voodoo.
Yeah.
I think it's called voodoon.
Voodoon.
If you actually literally spell it out.
I knew that.
If I'm recalling this correctly, it does not actually have anything to do with zombieism.
Oh.
There is a derivative of voodoo.
Cool.
That is literally, and I'm not kidding when I
don't
say
joke
this.
Around.
I don't joke around about this stuff. You don't want to joke around with voodoo
joke
because
around.
It will
joke around.
Come back to
joke
shrink
up,
your
joke
head
up
in
and
the
joke
end.
Down. Yeah.
Hoodoo.
Nice.
Hoodoo is actually this sort of bastardization of voodoo.
Wow.
And that is wherein the zombie concept has its what is traditionally considered the origin of zombieism is related to hoodoo. Hoodooism.
Hoodoos hoodoo.
lots of people do hoodoo.
Who did it? Who where does it come from? Who did it? Who did voodoo?
Who started the voodoo?
Haitians,
yeah, Haiti. Well, I think I don't know this for sure, but I think it's actually like a mixture of cultures in the area around Haiti, so like the Dominican Republic and
all right.
Haiti, and a lot of people attribute it to. You can even go back further and say that it was born out of Africa,
okay,
somewhere in Africa, and. The thing, it's hard to really define any of this, so I feel okay in saying, like, well, this is what I've heard.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody really has a solid feel this came from.
The only person who will potentially correct us is Eric.
Yes. We'll look forward to that.
We'll look forward to that text.
Hi, Eric. But so cultures... cultures were blended when you had a lot of trade ships coming in from Africa, Spain into the Caribbean,
okay,
and Dominican Republic area. A lot of slave trade going on, mm-hmm. So people being transplanted into the that area, and then either sort of blending practices with other religions and cultures that were brought over by other settlers or natives. Mm-hmm. So voodoo itself, or hoodoo, or any of those derivatives, it's hard to exactly pinpoint
C-do.
Where it starts. Sidu? I do?
I mean, Sidu could be another.
Sidu.
Voodoo, hoodoo, and Sidu, which is voodoo done on a jet ski. Sorry,
but
you didn't tell me who does hoodoo.
hoodoo priests.
But who are they? Where are they from?
Well, we associate
them
with
Haiti. Is it the same? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just a fringe group of
it's actually
voodoos.
Not, well, oh, yes, hoodoo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like the,
give me a modern day equivalent.
There are similarities in like the different sects of like Catholicism or any kind of Christian offshoot, really. And in fact, I think there's a lot of Christianity that worked its way into voodoo.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like your basic fundamental practices, like if in voodoo you have there's a variety of gods that you're worshiping. Mm-hmm. Hoodoo has a similar practice. It's the same type of thing, but it does it a little bit differently. Whereas, you know, voodoo might be all about restoring health, and hoodoo is more about placing curses.
Nice.
Now, that's a really broad definition of
the
differences.
We'll take it as your definition.
So I'll stand by it and get corrected by Eric. Hold on. Thank you, Eric. So that's where it starts. Our understanding of zombies. That's where it starts.
Yeah. Not our understanding of it.
Well,
but from where the modern day term and representation,
the popular
are derived.
Concept of the zombie, right?
The original zombie, if I remember this correctly, was basically didn't they have some kind of poison or drug that they would give people? They would appear to die, and then they would appear to rise from the dead, and they would be sort of mindless, but they would be, it would be like a bad hangover or something. Like they would
kind of
wake up in a daze and sort of stumble around.
I think the perceived death, I think that sort of came later.
Okay.
I think initially it was more just having somebody who was in sort of a trancy state and subservient to the instructions of whoever had administered the drug.
Zombified.
Yeah. Yeah, so zombie initially does not have anything to do with coming back from the dead. And in fact, it didn't for a long time, even in popular culture. Like, it's for the first movies that really featured zombies, like the back in like the 30s and 40s, it was a person who had been sort of brainwashed. Later on, the association with death is attached to it. And I don't know if that started with the movies or if it actually has some root in like actual like zombie practices or not. But yeah, it became a thing where a person was believed dead. They were actually just in this like trance like state where their functions had sort of been suspended temporarily. And then they would,
you don't want your functions suspended.
No.
The first, you talked about zombie movies in the 30s,
30s, 40s.
What are you
talking about? Well, the very first zombie movie, or at least the first one that I think had word zombie in the title, was White Zombie, Bela Lugosi. I think 1934. Four, maybe 32.
Did he play the zombie?
He did not.
Hmm.
I don't think so. Surprising. He played the zombie controller.
Oh,
the mastermind.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Did he have more than one?
I think he did. I think he had a.
What's the plot?
I don't remember. I don't. It's been probably 20 years since I saw it.
Oh, all right. I guess zombies really became well known. Well known. I mean, they didn't really hit the mainstream. I wouldn't say that, but they maybe gained more popularity with the Romero films.
Absolutely. And in fact, really, what we understand as
you
a zombie.
Kind of like what we.
What we.
What we.
Am I digging?
Oh, no. What we have
zombies as we know them. If you are so inclined, if you will go along with me. Yeah, George A. Romero, who was a co-writer and the director of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
He is really the one who gave us our modern definition of zombies.
Yeah. When we think of a zombie.
Yeah.
The template.
Yeah, yeah. And so by that meaning, somebody who is a corpse, a reanimated corpse, coming back and attacking the living.
Yeah.
And I think he also is the one who introduced the idea that they are attacking the living to eat them.
Did he introduce the idea that you could be turned into a zombie?
Within the way that we understand it, yeah. So there wasn't some mastermind like planting things in your brain,
right,
or poisoning you or something like that. It was more of a viral
infection
thing, right? Where something is transmitted to you from another zombie, and then you will then die and become a zombie.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's all in Night of the Living Dead. That's
right.
And now Romero had influences that led into that, and I think the two that he has cited most directly, one is the Richard Matheson book I Am Legend.
Oh.
Which is the creatures in that are not zombies. They're actually vampires or vampire-like characters.
Vampires.
Right. But it's the concept that the world was sort of overrun with them is where he got the biggest influence. And then there was another movie called Carnival of Souls, which came out in 1963. And that actually had – they were more like ghosts, really, than zombies. But they're this woman sees visions of these people, and they're sort of stalking her, but no one else really seems to see them. But they're kind of beckoning her to this location, and the climax of the movie is literally these dead people coming out of this lake bed and coming to get her.
That's horrifying.
So it's a creepy movie.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn, but it's a creep out creepathon. Ooh. So that's where Romero gets his influences from. And then he and this team in Pittsburgh get together and make this movie. And it's very, very guerrilla, very low budget. I think they made it in a couple of days or something like that. And his movie it takes place in a single location where a group of people are isolated, surrounded.
Uh-huh.
It's basically a siege story. What is sort of common across a lot of successful zombie movies is that idea that you have a group of people that are trapped.
Yeah.
And they not only have to deal with the threat from the outside, they also have to deal with the threat from the inside when their personalities clash.
Yeah.
They're not listening to the clash, but they
Ooh,
are
but
clashing.
They
yeah.
What if
clashing
they are, what
in the
if
sense
they are
that
the clash? A clash zombie movie.
I like it.
Like Let's the clash or what if the clash get stranded or besieged inside of a concert hall.
Okay.
With a crowd.
Of zombies?
Of zombies.
Oh. So they're playing to the crowd
and
of zombies.
And if they stop playing, zombies will attack.
Oh, but so they just have to keep playing.
Dulcet sounds of the clash keep the zombies sort of entranced.
Yeah, it's just this
what are you
wave
doing,
of
doing London Calling?
Yeah.
London Calling.
Yeah.
Do they have to only play London Calling?
Right. They just keep playing London Calling over and over and over again. That's the only way to stop the zombies.
What if you're like the one non-zombie in that crowd? And then like, I mean, you'd be safe as long as they keep playing London Calling.
Right.
But you wouldn't get to hear anything else you liked. Like you wouldn't want to yell out requests.
Would the zombies then turn on you?
Yeah. Well, no, but if
like,
they play
no,
anything
we
else.
We want to hear London Calling again. What are you doing? What's great about that is like everybody hates that jerk who's like yelling out song titles, you know, at the concert or whatever. So now that instead of
play Rudy good. Can't Fail. Sorry.
Who? Well, no, I don't think he did. Who? Well, you tell me. Who introduced the fallacy? Well,
the fallacy.
I guess I consider it a fallacy. I don't know if you do. Who introduced the concept that zombies only wanted to eat brains?
Okay. What happened after Night of the Living Dead? Okay. Night of the Living Dead comes out. It's very popular. And years later, Romero makes a sequel to it called Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, which we did talk a little bit about in the addendums episode, I think.
Did we?
I think we did. I mean, we can talk about it again now, but...
No one can stop us.
There were two... That's right.
I guess they could hit stop, though.
Yeah, I guess they could. So there are two big creative guys associated with Night of the Living Dead.
Physically large?
Well, yeah, actually, George Romero is a pretty large guy. He's like 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
Maybe not. but the other, his partner, John Russo, who is the co-screenwriter of Night of the Living Dead, the two of them have sort of differing visions of how this story continues. Mm. So George Romero makes Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
John Russo, a couple years after that,
After Dawn of the Dead?
After Dawn of the Dead. He writes a book called Return of the Living Dead. Right. That comes out, I think, actually not too much after Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead was huge, and it's hard, not having been alive at the time, it's hard knowing how huge it was or even understanding.
Right. Did you say how it was huge? I mean, when you say huge, like popular in the mainstream, huge or within that culture, the subculture of horror films or
I would say, well, within the culture of horror films, but also beyond that, in as much as like, you know, today, so for example, there was that remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre that came out, and it made money. And then suddenly there was a remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, and there's a remake of Friday the 13th. So something set off a wave of
movies. You.
And Dawn of the Dead did the same thing for zombies in 78 when it came out. So it comes out, and then suddenly, because it was so successful, and part of the reason it was so successful is because it was a limited budget, but it grossed really, it was very gross.
It was gross.
It made a lot of money, and it made a lot of people sick because it was so gross. There were all these imitators, right?
Yeah.
And so people are sort of riding the coattails. And you could argue, I think, that John Russo was also sort of riding the coattails when he had all this time to write this book, and then suddenly when Dawn of the Dead becomes popular, then he's going to write this book about zombies, you know?
But he does have a bit more clout.
Yeah, sure. He was associated with, you know, Ground Zero, really, with Night of the Living Dead. So he writes Return of the Living Dead, and years later, it gets made as a movie, and that's really where the brains... thing comes from. Right. 1985, Return of the Living Dead. Yeah. Russo actually didn't have anything to do with it. It was sort of out of his hands at that point.
Wow.
But that is the first time
in his book, is it our brains?
I don't remember. You know, his book is really hard to read because it kind of sucks. But
and is it different? Is the world different in that the zombie outbreak is contained?
Yes, actually, that's a good point, too. In the Romero's vision, this was not an isolated incident,
right? And it's worldwide.
It's a global thing. You only see it from a small group of people,
and
but like
continues to get worse,
right? So with each
from movie to movie,
with each movie, the epidemic gets
spread
bigger, and the implications are much greater or worse for everybody. So like by the third movie, there's only a few human survivors left, and they're all living underground in Romero's series.
In Day of the Dead.
Yeah. But in the Return of the Living Dead saga, they take that movie, that series takes the perspective that this was an isolated incident. It was like a chemical spill, and that's what brought these things back to life in Night of the Living Dead. And then Return of the Living Dead, 20 years later, 25 years later, these drums turn up. They're government property. They have this chemical inside them.
Not like percussion. Some island music.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. That was my impression of steel drums, apparently. Can you do a steel drum sound? It's the hard part is to come up with the melody itself.
Yeah.
Do 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 do.
There you go. Steel
drums. I'm trying to get some kind of resonance.
Yeah.
That's the steel drum. It has resonance.
I can just put some steel drums in this.
Do a try to get resonance.
Do it. Try to get some resonance.
So these drums show up in Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah. Barrels full of chemicals.
Yeah.
And bodies. Ooh. That when released come back to life.
Okay.
This chemical brings things back to life, and the zombies in Return of the Living Dead are attacking people and eating their brains. And they actually get interviewed at one point.
The zombies?
Yeah. And have you seen Return of the Living Dead?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's awesome. It's great. It's awesome in a completely different way than Dawn of the Dead.
But like actually awesome? Or do you mean like bad?
No, it's
awesome?
A classic. I mean, it's not.
So the book's not good, but the movie's good.
The movie is fantastic because it goes in a completely different direction.
Okay.
So the movie is very fun. It's scary too. It's also it's a pretty dark story.
It's
but
got some scares in there.
It's also really fun.
All right.
So that's you can go two different directions.
I agree.
You can go really smart and have a really great zombie movie, or you can go in the fun direction where you're going to sort of play with the audience a little bit.
Yeah.
If our friends across the pond might say cheeky.
Oh, okay.
Huh? So, Return of the Living Dead goes that route.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is a punk movie in every sense of the word, meaning that the characters are punk, the music is
punkers.
Punk, but it's also the attitude of the movie is very punkish. You know, it's sort of breaking what you're expecting. It's breaking from your expectations, especially your zombie expectations.
Interview, you said.
Well, it's not really an interview. They interrogate one of the zombies, and they're like, why are you eating brains? And they say that because eating brains takes away the pain of being dead.
Oh.
Yeah. I would think ice cream would do the same thing.
Agreed.
I don't know. I'm not dead.
Night of the Living Dead. Dawn of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
which is an amazing movie.
It's incredible.
And the remake's really good, too.
Yeah. Different kind of
totally
good.
Well,
but, yeah.
This is what I think we talked about in Addendums.
Yeah.
Was the remake.
Primarily.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we talked about it.
Because it's good. Dawn of the Dead, the remake, is good as a zombie movie and as a different take on, you know, the same concept of these
isolated characters.
Survivors in a mall.
Right.
And then, you know, zombies attacking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think both are appropriate for the time that they were made.
Yeah, yeah, they reflect their eras very well.
Dawn of the Dead is really the remake has an excellent opening.
Yeah,
really good opening.
Yeah,
opening,
that's the one. This is the one with Sarah Pauli, I think.
Yeah,
and
the opening sequence into the opening credits.
Yeah,
is really good.
And that great Johnny Cash song. Yeah,
excellent stuff.
Yeah,
and that's Zack Snyder, right?
Yeah.
It's really the only Zack Snyder film that I've thoroughly enjoyed.
I think that was his first one, his first feature, at least. I think he had done videos prior to that. I really don't like his style very much.
No, I don't.
But
really
I find it tolerable in Dawn of the Dead.
I think he's all style is the problem.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which is you could argue is what really differentiates that version of Dawn of the Dead from the first one. Whereas the original Dawn of the Dead, Romero's, is like so full of substance.
Yes.
And it's not like, it's not, I don't want to say it's like Bergman or something like the lost work of Orson Welles or
something.
You know, but there is substance there. There's definitely more than just what you're seeing superficially happening on screen.
Yeah.
Whereas, I think it's its strength, Dawn of the Dead, the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which I think came out in 2004, that one is like all surface.
Yeah.
But it's like so aggressively surface.
It's great surface.
It goes straight for the gut and doesn't let up. And that's why it works, because it doesn't.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too, like sort of universal policy on zombie movies. It seems like if no matter what direction you go in, you've got to go full throttle, you know, and not, you can't really.
Sort of extremes.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be willing to push it beyond what people would necessarily be comfortable with, yeah. I guess.
And I think exponentially.
Yes.
I think because as the audience gets comfortable, as the movie goes on, the audience sort of starts to accept things and mm-hmm. says, okay, I'm comfortable with this.
Right.
And you have to push beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. You have to establish like a world or a setting, and then you have to disrupt that, you know?
Yeah, and then disrupt that.
Yeah, yeah. Constantly get people to a point where they feel settled and then shake up their environment.
Yes.
Shake up the setting. Yeah, totally.
So after Dawn of the Dead is Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're living underground.
Yeah.
And in this movie, they have a zombie in chains.
Yeah. Sort
Bob.
Of as Bub.
Bub.
Yeah, that was interesting where they actually took a zombie and made him sort of a real character.
The interesting, well, and what I find commendable about Romero's films is there's a thread that is drawn, I think, through all of them
mm-hmm.
that I've seen so far, in that he sticks with his continuity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Night of the Living Dead, it's, as far as you know,
thematic continuity,
yeah.
sort of. Yeah. Not like the same characters are not.
No, no, it's always different
movies,
characters.
But, yeah.
but the Night of the Living Dead, you feel like it seems like one instance, you mm-hmm. know, it's very bleak. Mm-hmm. It ends badly.
Also, the
for everyone
of a good
involved.
Zombie movie.
Yeah. And then you think it's kind of done. And then Dawn of the Dead is where you, I think, right? Where you realize mm-hmm. this is widespread.
Yeah. It's sort of, it's on the cusp of it losing, it's yeah. on the cusp of society losing control. Is Dawn of the Dead takes place.
And you, in that movie, the people in it, the survivors, I think are still holding on to some hope that it can be
yeah.
resolved.
Yeah.
But there, it's all, I think it starts to transition into there is no hope.
Yeah.
Day of the Dead, I think they're like, this is our world now.
Yeah, they've transformed their lifestyles
and
around it.
Hence Bub and the attempt to... So they're sort of studying him, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to... What are they trying... They're trying to do something with him, aren't they?
Well, initially, what they are there to do, the scientists are there with the military as sort of, I guess, a government operation to try to figure out a way to stop them. You know, like to stop them on a large scale, to figure out what's causing it and then also how to stop it. But what comes out of that storyline as it evolves is that the scientist, the lead scientist, is actually, he's not trying to figure out a way to stop them. He's sort of given up on that. And instead, he's more trying to figure out a way to make them more sociable.
Yep.
To make it where we can live with them or domesticate them.
Yeah.
And it's what's interesting is that he succeeds, arguably. Yeah. Yeah, you know, with Bub, he actually, you have the first instance where a zombie is actually doing something more than just attacking.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like there's actually like a thought process going on in there where he's not just drifting. He seems to recognize things and understand things.
But I think you see glimpses of that in Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
So this is what I mean, like this thread.
Yeah.
You see the evolution of these zombies.
Yeah.
And then what's the fourth one called?
Land of the Dead.
Land of the Dead.
Yeah.
Now it's like, this is the world we live in. No one's trying to, you know, change anything. They're just trying to make the best of it.
They're just, yeah.
So you've got like the people with all the money kind of living in really like high up above, you know, the earth.
They have
not
like
the
yeah,
earth,
it's like a walled.
Yeah, they're in like
it's a high rise.
Yeah,
and they everything is contained within there.
Yeah, and the higher you live in the high rise, like the richer and safer you are, and the further down you go, the more lawless it becomes. And then outside of that, it's just zombies
total
everywhere.
Chaos, yeah.
But what they learn, you know, in an expedition out, is that these zombies are like resuming their lives in a way.
Yeah.
Like there's one zombie, there's like one main zombie they focus on who's sort of working in quotes at a gas station. like he sits there and he goes through the motions of what it was to be a,
as though he's yeah just doing his day job yeah, or whatever yeah,
which is an interesting, I like, so that movie, while I don't think it's great,
uh-huh,
I like the idea that the zombies, given nothing else to do, nothing to attack,
yeah,
resume their boring tasks.
Right. They just like, they become just average Joes. Yeah.
And like, if it's not clear, like, you know, Romero's like, okay, do you get it? Like, uh-huh, you're a zombie. You are.
Right.
This is what you do, you know?
Which is arguably like, yeah, his statement throughout all of them, it's slightly different. It's approached differently, yeah, but you know, the main argument of the first one was that, okay, you know, there's these monsters outside, but really it's the monstrous stuff is the way in which we treat each other, you know? So, Dawn of the Dead, the main thrust was on consumerism. Yeah. And so the zombies then became a metaphor for people just sort of blindly buying things, you know? And obviously the mall setting reinforces that. The third one in Day of the Dead, that one's always been the most problematic for me in terms of that. But, it definitely came out of its era, I think, and in some ways seems stuck there. You know, it doesn't seem quite as timeless as some of the other ones.
I find it hard to watch.
Day of the Dead?
Yeah.
I think it is the least what I would call entertaining.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's great. But he was also, that was the first one where he was sort of, his vision was compromised too. And I think that may have undermined him in a bit.
Did you see Diary of the Dead?
I did.
I did not see that.
I've seen Diary of the Dead, and that was made, I think, in like 2006, 2007, something like that. And then there's been another one after that called Survival of the Dead, I think, which I haven't seen. And it was sort of universally panned, and which is unfortunate. But Diary of the Dead is interesting. It goes back to the roots of the outbreak, if you will, and it was sort of obvious what his commentary was at that point. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but as people retroactively recognized like Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead as like social critiques,
yeah,
it made George Romero
make them.
Right, yeah. Like they sort of became more overt in what they were commenting on.
Yeah, and I think that's evidence in
Land of the Dead, too. Yeah, yep. Definitely. Definitely.
Beware. I'd like to tell a little story about a girl from far away. You might feel bad, you might feel sorry. So they say, well, once upon a time there was a sweeter, a pretty girl flipped her friend. She took a walk down by the graveyard, and I don't know why something grabbed her hand. I heard that zombies in a brain. That's how she turned out this way.
What makes a good zombie movie?
What makes a good zombie movie?
There should be zombies.
Yeah. Hello. You do plan on having zombies in your zombie movie.
Do you have a preference? Or does it matter to you if the zombies can run?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's all on how it's handled.
I also don't think it matters.
I think it's a stupid argument, and I also think it's you know, they don't need to eat brains, you know.
They do or don't.
Yeah, right. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
I think as long as they're mindlessly aggressive
mm-hmm.
toward the living.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're beyond reason.
Yeah.
They're not something that we can talk our way out of. Yeah.
And
that they have to be unrelenting too. I think yes. that's the other thing.
Unrelenting. Like,
they're not scary if there is an end in sight.
I think they have to be, the whole bitten and then turned thing has to be there. Like the infection aspect.
Oh, okay.
I don't like it when, and I can't think of an instance where it isn't this, where the case isn't that. If you're bitten or somehow infected, you turn. Like, I've never seen that not part of the equation.
At least, yeah, lately. I think there are versions of it. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But, yeah, definitely within the last 20 years. That's
the reason standard. I feel this way is based on the book World War Z,
mm-hmm.
which is a really good book.
Yes, it's great.
It takes you away from the isolation or isolated incident or focusing on one group of people because it is a worldwide narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, well, I should say, spoiler alert, mm-hmm. although you would
should
learn
say
this,
that.
You would learn this in the first like chapter of the book, spoiler alert. They make it out of the zombie epidemic. Like they resolve it.
They're reflecting on it.
Yeah, it is
narrative.
The narration takes place after the fact. So this guy in the book in the narrative of the book, this guy's writing a documentary about what has happened, and in the setting of the book, it takes place after everything. So they've. The zombie outbreak, there's still lingering, you know, problems, but it is for the most part just extinguished. Mm-hmm. But what I really like in that book is in one of the chapters, they're talking, I think the chapter is actually called Total War. Mm-hmm. And the zombie outbreak is now in full force and there's, you know, it's widespread, it's worldwide. And everyone is fighting and trying to kill all of these zombies. And I think the chapter may be from the perspective of one of the military generals or something like that. And they're talking about how, I think they reference in World War II, Nazi Germany declared total war, which meant we are always at war.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy makes the point that technically they aren't because they sleep, they eat, you know, they need to rest because they are human. But with the zombie outbreak, it is the absolute embodiment of total war because the zombies never stop. They don't need to sleep. They don't even need to eat. They can just relentlessly.
They're going to keep coming whether they.
Yeah. And you. When you suffer losses on your side to the zombies, it increases their army.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, you know, not only are they hard to kill, not only are they relentless, but when they kill you, you join their side.
Yeah.
So they're constantly.
So your side loses people and their side gains people.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I never really thought about that. Those, you know, the fact it was always, I think, unconsciously you understand that
mm-hmm.
or unconsciously, subconsciously,
when you're asleep, you
subconsciously, you understand that, you know, on a level that maybe you don't register, you understand that these zombies never stop and that, you know, when they kill you, you come back to life as one of them. But, I'd never seen it sort of explained that way. And it was really interesting. Concept. And that book is very good. And not only as a zombie narrative, but the way it looks at what that type of epidemic would mean on a geopolitical stage. You know, who comes out okay and who doesn't? And, you know, how does each nation respond? And whether, you know, it's realistic or not, who knows? but it's a really neat sort of look
the
at
what hypothesis.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and so I recommend it very highly.
Yeah,
and they're making a movie, but
I don't.
From what I've read, it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know how that will ever translate.
Well, I think I've read it's not going to be like documentary style the way the book is. It's going to be in the moment. Like it's not a look back. It takes place as it's happening. And I think I just can't imagine it could possibly capture the scale effectively.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we could be wrong.
Maybe it'd be great.
Eric, are we wrong? Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So I think that the bite and then you become a zombie that, imperative.
Okay. That's fair. I'll go along with that.
Like you said, I agree with you on the fact that you can either have a fun zombie movie where you play off of audience expectations of a zombie film. I think no matter which route you go, you need the despair and the hopelessness.
Yes. Yeah.
I think in the fun side of things, that's tempered by either comedy or, you know, sort of lightheartedness. You know, it actually kind of accentuates that despair.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, on the sort of brainy side of things, the intelligence side, you have to be careful of, like we were saying, the overt commentary.
Right. You don't know. Want to sound like you're, or come yeah. across like you're preaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm not sure yet where I fall as far as like an action zombie flick.
Okay.
Because it just feels like an action flick.
Mm-hmm.
Usually.
Yeah, I think it can. I think there's a darker side to it, though.
There can be.
Yeah, I think, well, usually. I think if it's done well, I think there is. This actually highlights an interesting thought that sort of came to mind as we were talking about this, that obviously zombies have recently been very popular, more popular than they were 10 years ago or, you know, 20 years ago, I think.
20 years ago.
Okay.
I think 10 years ago is when this all started.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, we've been riding this wave of zombie popularity where they've been very omnipresent in the culture. And I feel like while I definitely feel like there's been some like fatigue set in, you know, like I don't know how many years it's been, but I've definitely feel like zombies have been sort of overexposed, you know, which is, we should also say, I think it's part of the reason why we were kind of hesitant to even do this episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because we sort of feel like, oh God, they're so played out now. But I've seen things, I continue to see zombie movies that I enjoy and that I think are really good. And so I don't feel like I can say that, you know, zombies are, they're done, you know, that they're played out. I can't say that because people do find ways to make them entertaining, but it seems like it's by staying true to the fundamentals of a good zombie movie, those don't really change, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I've seen like a zombie action movie. I can't think of what it's called. It might just be called The Dead, but it's like a French movie, and it takes place in like an isolated location. It's an apartment complex that gets besieged by zombies, and there's nothing original whatsoever about it.
Yeah.
But it's done very well. It is, in every sense of the word, a zombie action movie, you know? Whereas I think something like, The Walking Dead or Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, that book that sort of started this whole movement of taking classical literature
the movement has been mainly one guy.
More or less, yeah.
Seth Graham.
But, you know, Smith? He's not the only one who's done things.
I don't
there have been a lot
I think
of offshoots.
The Lincoln
of it.
One is that him?
I don't think that's him. There's a Mark Twain, or not Mark Twain, but it's like Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, and Zombies, or something like that. Yeah. So there are all of these sort of postmodern infusions of history and zombies that sort of took off after Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. But it's like those things, I think they don't work, and they don't work because zombies are played out. Or it's not that they don't work because people are sick of zombies or I'm sick of zombies. They don't work because they're not true to the essentials of a zombie story, a good zombie story, you know? Like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, I don't dislike that because I'm sick of zombies. I dislike it because I don't like Pride and Prejudice. You know?
So you don't think these things fall down due to the fact that zombies are played out,
right?
It sounds like they fall down for you because they don't follow the tenets established in what makes a zombie movie good,
yeah,
or a zombie narrative good,
yeah. And I think like those are not the reason probably why it's so hard to do it well is because they're not like hard and fast rules. It's not right. Like a formula that you can do. It's just be true to them each in their own way, such that, like, you know, Shaun of the Dead is sort of true to the fun zombie ethos in that it never stops being entertaining, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing with like a fun zombie movie. It can go in a lot of different directions and it can like vacillate between very dark moments and really ridiculous ones. Yeah. But as long as it is continuously entertaining and it does not leave you, you know, wanting it to be over, it will work.
Yeah. And it never strays into one area for good. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like with Shaun of the Dead, it's a great example because it'll be funny for a while and then it'll be bleak. And then it'll be funny again, and then it'll be scary, and then you know what I mean.
Right,
so
right.
It continually goes back and forth, and it never stays in one spot.
And I think it's also important to, and I think this Shaun of the Dead's a great example for showing how you can do this well. You have to commit to what you're doing.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Things have to happen, and they can't go back.
Yeah.
There can never be a going back stage.
Yeah.
You know, and Shaun of the Dead is a great example of how you can do that and still make a palatable movie that's not just oppressively dark and brooding. You know, and sort of on the flip side of that, and this is I think where Walking Dead comes in, like. With a more serious like character study zombie story, when I said that I dislike Walking Dead, whenever I'm discussing it with somebody and I say I don't like Walking Dead, and sort of the first thing that comes to mind is like, you know, well, I want there to be more zombies. And the immediate counter argument is like, well, it's not really about the zombies, you know, it's about the people. I get that. I understand that, you know, and I'm fine with it. And in fact, that's really what all good zombie movies are about.
Yes.
They're not about the zombies. They're about the people. But you can't make a zombie story that's really about the people and then not have interesting people, you know?
Yeah.
that's the problem. There's nobody in that storyline that's interesting.
I chuckled when you said character study.
Right, because it's hard to... It's hard to have a character study if your characters aren't worth studying, you know, if there's nothing there to get into.
Without going too far down this well, because you and I think are unique in our dislike for The Walking Dead. I mean, we know other people who share our opinion,
right.
But on a large
scale,
we're
in the minority. Yeah.
We are probably in the minority. We are. I mean, the people, I have lots of friends who love it, you know, and I think it's okay. You know, people like what they like.
Right. Yeah.
I like what I like. I don't like. But what really, what bugs me the most about The Walking Dead, and I think also what makes it successful, is that it is so overt in its representation of the clash between people, mm-hmm. between the human survivors, the, you know, and I've only seen the first season, so I can't speak for what has come after. And I've only read of the comic. I've only read, I haven't read the whole, you know, series. I've only read a certain amount of it. And I only stepped away from the comic because they changed the artist and I didn't like the new artist. The comic is better than the show. I will say that. But the show, it's just like in that first season, it's such cliched conflict of like, this guy's racist and oh, he has to, you know, survive with a black guy and this guy beats his wife and isn't that horrible?
It's
and
so, it's very contrived.
It's and just the most, what, you know, well-trodden narrative ground ever mm-hmm. with zombies. Yeah. Sometimes.
There's no nuance
sometimes
to anything.
There are zombies.
Yeah, yeah. Occasionally a zombie
might show up. There's no nuance. It's so it's so on the nose, and it's so and without, you know, that's not the only problem I have with it, but that is the most glaring problem.
Yeah.
Is the lack of interesting character in there, and the fact that, you know, so I said I think this is also why it's very successful, is because for those of us who are familiar with the zombie movie and story ethos.
Mm-hmm. Paradigm.
Paradigm. We've seen that so many times.
Yeah.
We've seen the story that The Walking Dead presents often.
Right.
Now, The Walking Dead is the first mainstream television series to address zombies. It's
presenting that thing that we're familiar with to everybody else. Yeah.
In a way that's palatable to a large audience.
Right.
And a lot of shows, non-zombie shows, have paved the way for The Walking Dead to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And they are character study shows that have made an executive look at The Walking Dead and be like, let's make this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The zombies, I think, are incidental.
Yeah.
To the success of the movie. Yeah. I think, or the movie, the show. The show follows a format that is really prevalent right now.
Yeah.
And it just happens to have zombies in it.
Right.
So that's why I can't get into it.
Yeah.
One show that is really cool that comes from our friends across the pond is a show called Dead Set. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
And it does exactly what I think a zombie movie should do. It hits so many perfect notes of what you want out of a zombie movie. The premise is that a group of people have been selected to be on a reality series where it's basically like Big Brother, mm-hmm. right? The show. And while they're in this house, a zombie outbreak happens outside of the house. And they don't really know about it at first. And so they're you know, it's just, it's really good. They, and in the narrative of the show is such that they can't leave the house. So they're already besieged.
Right.
You know, they're besieged from the beginning by the viewing public, right? Uh-huh. Everyone's watching their every move. So this is where the commentary comes in, right? Uh-huh. And as through the course of the show, I think it's like a 6-episode show. They realize what's happening outside, and then they literally become besieged by zombies.
By the zombies.
And without going into what happens, it is just very true to, I think, the more intelligent and sort of bleak version of zombie movies. It's really cutting. It's really sharp.
Well, it would have to be.
But I recommend it if you can find it. And I
Dead set on Dead Set.
It's excellent.
All right, good.
But deal. But that's, you know, example of they still find ways to make this idea palatable.
Yeah.
To make it good
and relevant and compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's because the concept of zombies works so well because they are a mirror to humanity. Mm-hmm. The zombies are a proxy for a way
for
to comment on society. And so no matter what, as long as society is doing something, you can use zombies to comment on that.
Yeah.
So with reality television, you know, they took the zombie perspective and added it to that, you know, and it worked. It was great. And so there's I think that's why it can be played out and still be really new and really fresh.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will piggyback onto that. I'm going to
jump on my back.
I'm not going to jump on your back. I am going to also say another thing here. Part of the reason why zombies work continually when they're done well is that in addition to being a foil for, you know, humans, they are like the embodiment of the greatest threat. Like the inescapable fact that everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
Is
the literal fact.
Yeah. Right.
Like literally not because of zombies, but everyone will die.
Everyone will die. And there are various ways that it's going to happen and various times, and you can't really predict it. Just like in a zombie movie, you can't really predict how it's going to play out. But you know the end result.
Yeah.
You know, which is where this is an appropriately bleak topic to go out on, because no matter what.
Everything must end.
In a true zombie story, you know, yeah, there is no way, I think, for it to have I don't want to say a happy ending, because happiness can be interpreted a lot of different ways. You know, you can have a happy ending to a zombie movie.
Yes.
However, the ultimate result of the narrative is certain doom.
Yeah.
You know, the characters are doomed one way or another. Yeah. And maybe that means that they're going to die by the hand of a zombie, or, you know, they're going to be turned into zombies. Maybe it doesn't mean that. Maybe it just means that they're going to have to live in a world populated with zombies.
Yeah.
But either way, from our perspective, living in a relatively comfortable society, the zombie story presents us with the inevitability of an end, you know.
Yeah.
Like things are going to eventually get bad.
It puts it right in your face.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that's, you know, the threat of death is always present. Like you said, everyone will die.
Right.
All of us. But we don't think about it.
Yeah.
You live your life.
Right.
And you don't.
You can't think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what a zombie outbreak forces you to do is to always think about it.
Yeah.
That's all they're thinking about, is when am I going to die?
You're literally on the run from death.
Yeah. And one thing that I love, or I think is great in a zombie movie that just sort of makes you chuckle, is when someone dies of something other than a zombie in a zombie movie.
Yes.
When you're like, oh my God, that's the way you go out in this film. Like, instead of being killed by the massive, you know, outbreak of zombies, like you fall down a, you know, set of stairs or something, you know, and that just drives the point home of like, no one's safe.
Yeah.
Even the people who are safe are not safe. You know, you may survive the zombies, but you're still going to die.
Right. Somehow.
Yeah.
Some way. Yeah.
You may survive this podcast, but one day. You're gonna be listening to this, and we're gonna send a psychic zap through the microphone.
Put it in the archive.
Oh my God, so grim.